This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Lloyd Barbie is perhaps best known as the lawyer and state legislator who fought to desegregate Milwaukee's public schools. But a new book lays out just how broad Barbie's fight for justice was. Beyond education, Barbie pushed for open housing, women's rights, and decolonization.
He would often sign his letters with the quote, "Justice for All." And that's the title of a new book, Justice for All, The Selected Writings of Lloyd A. Barbie. The book is edited by his daughter, Daphne Barbie Wooten.
Race and ethnicity reporter Aisha Turner spoke with Barbie Wooten about her father's influence in Milwaukee. Like her father, Daphne Barbie Wooten would become a civil rights lawyer, a path she chose at an early age.
I ran down the stairs of the school, and I was 11. And I tripped and I broke my ankle. In those days, this is the olden days, you got that huge big cast on your foot. So I was laid up in the house with a huge big cast on. I couldn't go to school. And so what did I do all day? Because TV wasn't the vogue and we didn't have internet. So I read a lot of his law books. And, you know, from reading the law books, I read, like, Clarence Darrow, My Life. Fascinating. And I thought, oh, this is fun. This looks like fun, you know, being this kind of lawyer. And I read Thurgood Marshall and a whole bunch of things that really made me to decide to do it.
What was your father like just on a personal level?
Oh, he was very soft-spoken. He was humble. Demure. He loved operas. So on Sundays, that was his day to rest. And he'd put on his headphones and listen to opera. He also cooked. He was very good on his omelets and bread. He made bread. He was a very nice man. He was very nurturing, shall I say, to myself and my two brothers. And so he was really busy. Like, he'd be at the legislature and he'd come back in time to make sure we were in bed or, you know, that we had our homework done. He did his best, and I give him full credit.
And I'm sure this is hard to summarize, but just when you talk about him, like, how do you summarize his impact on the city?
Humongous. I think he's one of the great Wisconsin representatives and leaders in Wisconsin. In addition to sponsoring bills, he also led a lot of civil rights marches. Protests and boycotts. He did the school boycotts. In Milwaukee, in the 60s and 70s, was extremely segregated. So he came from Memphis, Tennessee, which was segregated. So you had the segregated South, and he went to segregated schools. And then he moved up north and went to the University of Wisconsin Law School and found that there was discrimination in the north. And so he saw that there wasn't much difference, and he decided to make a change. If the South was going to change with the laws of Brown versus Board of Education, so should the north. And so he saw that. He had a vision, and he went ahead, first of all, with the Fair Housing Bill, make sure that there was open housing, people could live where they want and not be discriminated against, and also that the schools should be integrated.
For me, as someone that's, like, not from here, that was actually one of the first stories I heard when I moved to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. But I've been told by a lot of folks from the area that, like, people don't actually know about the open housing marches or just about, like, the civil rights movement in Milwaukee in general. And
yeah,
that, like, a lot of that legacy has been lost.
There was quite a bit of civil rights protests in Milwaukee. I actually was on those freedom marches for fair housing as well as for the school desegregation. People don't know there was a school boycott because the schools were so segregated. And African-American students and parents pulled their kids out of the schools and started what's called the Freedom Schools. There were a lot of threats made on the parents and the students that wanted to get equal education. Even the school board had teachers send notes home with the children saying, if you participate in this boycott, you will be expelled and your parents may be arrested for promoting truancy. It was really deep. It was really heavy. There was a lot of obstacles. And people, including my father, chained themselves to school buses that were using children and busing them to all-white schools, African-American children, from their neighborhoods, but keeping them intact. It's called intact busing. What that meant is if you were on that bus and you went to a school, an all-white school, and you were African-American, you had to sit at a separate lunch counter. You had to play on the playground at a separate time. All of that is racist, and it's against the law. I think everybody knows that now. But at that time, the Milwaukee Public School said, no, we're giving them equal education. But that simply isn't true. And so a lot of protesters, including my father, chained themselves to the school buses. My father was arrested. However, because he was a state representative, he had legislative immunity. And he represented a lot of the people who were arrested and the protesters. One thing that was really interesting to me is that my father had fought to have university students have the rights of due process before they're expelled. Because at UW-Oshkosh, I don't know if you know this, the University of Wisconsin at Oshkosh had black students in 1972 give a written demand to the president that they wanted black history to be taught at the university. And they were immediately kicked out of the president's office. And in addition to being kicked out, they were expelled. So my father represented some of the students, and he got a federal court to rule that the school could not just expel them for protesting and requesting black history. Flash forward to a week ago, I just read, the Board of Regents have decided that students cannot protest. And if they protest, they will be expelled. Now, I have not read the actual rule. I'm just saying what I've read in the paper about this new rule, that they are discouraging student protests. So you wonder, what's going on? I mean, didn't we fight this, 70, that's like 40 years ago, 50 years ago? Wasn't this fought brought forward then? Why are we going backwards? Another interesting fact is that birth control, women's rights, the new presidential government, the federal government, is now saying that employers do not have to provide insurance for women who want birth control. My father, there's a passage you asked me earlier, is there a particular passage that I thought would be interesting to the radio listeners?
Yeah, please.
And this is a passage. He fought for birth control. He fought for abortion rights. He wrote this article about birth control, and it was a comment on March 8, 1973. He introduced the bill. It was voted down. Finally, it got passed. I think he was out of the legislature at that time. So that's how long it took to get the right to birth control. Here's what he says. In a recent hearing before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, State Senator Gordon Roselip presented a speech opposing the liberalization of Wisconsin's birth control laws. This is nothing new. The astounding characteristic of his presentation, however, was the illogical and irony in which he employed the speech. From the premise that sons of the poor were the primary source of manpower for Vietnam War. So he didn't want poor people to have birth control because he said those are the children that are born will go in the front lines of the war. Roselip said, now you want to give contraceptions to poor people? Where are we going to get men for the armed forces if we have another conflict? It's going to destroy the army. Can you imagine?
I think one of the things I was kind of struck by is I'd mostly heard about your father's impact on education. Mm-hmm. But it's like it's interesting to me to then like just learn about like all of these different issues that he was fighting for. And I think often like we kind of silo people. And it's like so-and-so fought yes. for education. This person fought for housing. This person fought for like workers' rights or women's mm-hmm. rights. Mm-hmm. Can you just like talk a little bit about this idea of like kind of like intersectionality and how different oppressions are linked and like how that's important, an important takeaway from your father and maybe lessons to be learned from that today?
Absolutely. It's not just one particular civil rights that you're fighting for. He started off with fair housing rights and he fought for people to have an opportunity to rent no matter what sex, race, color, religion. He fought very hard for that. Of course, the school desegregation. He fought for criminal justice, which applies to everyone, due process rights, right to get bail. He also fought for people to sit on juries to be of all races and religions and sex. At the time, you had all white juries judging black people who were accused of crimes. And when a black person was up for jury duty, the prosecutors who were white would always bump that person. And so my father fought hard. Mm-hmm. He also wrote a lot of comments on international civil rights, as well as national figures. So for one little known fact is he was the one who brought the bill to get England out of Ireland. At that time, during the late 1960s and 70s, Ireland, who wanted England out of Northern Ireland, were studying the civil rights protests of Martin Luther King and employing a lot of the same tactics with the marches. And lo and behold, the British start to shoot and kill a lot of them. And that's where the U2 song Bloody Sunday, Sunday Bloody Sunday comes from, is the killing of a lot of innocent people who were protesting in Ireland to get England out of Ireland. And the Irish, he supported a bill to get the British out of Ireland. And as a result, he was invited by some Irish government officials to come to Trinity University in Ireland, in Dublin, to give a speech on civil rights protests. And he took us kids to go with him. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. There's an international side that not that many people really knew about, talk about intersectionality. He wrote about China. He wrote about, of course, Africa and getting the colonists out of Africa. He wrote about South Africa, which at that time was under the apartheid system and how bad it was. So he did introduce to the community here in Wisconsin an international flair that we should look not just at our own backyard and our own home, but look at the world and see what's going on with the world and see what we can do to make it a better place and to get rid of oppression.
Do you have any of those pages marked?
Yes, I do. Violence and repression in Northern Ireland, and this is on page 234, 1972. In a recent comment, I discussed the conditions of repression and violence in Northern Ireland. Contemporary colonialism continues to manifest itself throughout the world, often despite expressed opposition to world public opinion and the passage of laws supposedly freeing former colonies. To some extent, colonialism and imperialism is evident on every continent. The U.S. is in Asia. The USSR is in Eastern Europe. Britain, Portugal, and Belgium are in Africa. All of these instances of present-day colonialism stem from that unfortunate age of discovery concept known as hegemony. Hegemony is the sphere of influence within which one government is predominant over another. Hegemony, however, does not mean simply political influence. Hegemony can be achieved, and frequently is, by the use of economic power. It is through this means that despite nominally divesting themselves of their African colonies, such nations as Portugal, England, Belgium, and the U.S. continue to control the destinies of millions of black people.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate this show, and I appreciate spreading the word about the history of civil rights in Wisconsin.
Daphne Barbie Wooten is an attorney and the editor of Justice for All, Selected Writings of Lloyd A. Barbie. She spoke with Lake Effect's Aisha Turner.
Support for Race and Ethnicity Reporting is provided by the Ramaya Family Foundation.